సహ నౌ భునక్తు సహ వీర్యం కరవావహై తేజస్వినావధీతమస్సు మా విద్విషావహై. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి.
Let us begin.
Until she comes, you'll have to do the advance.
She's getting the remote for me.
Let's start with verse 8, please.
8. All right.
We're continuing in chapter 7.
Let me get some recitation. Verse 8, please. There it is. Thank you.
I'll take care of it.
All right.
Repeat after me, please. Rasoham apsu Kaunteya. Rasoham apsu Kaunteya. Prabhasmi shashi suryayoho. Prabhasmi shashi suryayoho. Pranavah sarva vedeshu, pranavah sarva vedeshu. Shabdakhe paurusham drushu, shabdakhe paurusham drushu. Punyo gandha prativyamcha, punyo gandha prativyamcha. Tejas chasmi vibhavasau, tejas chasmi vibhavasau. Jivanam sarvabhuteshu, jivanam sarvabhuteshu. Tapaschasmi tapasvishu, tapaschasmi tapasvishu. Bijam mam sarvabhutanam, bijam mam sarvabhutanam. Vidhi partha sanatanam, vidhi partha sanatanam. Buddhir buddhimatamasmi, buddhir buddhimatamasmi. Tejas tejasvinamaham, tejas tejasvinamaham. Balam balavatam chaham, balam balavatam chaham. Kamaraga vivarjitam, kamaraga vivarjitam. Dharma virudho bhuteshu, dharma virudho. Kamosmi bhartarshabha, kamosmi bhartarshabha. Ye chaiva satvika bhava, ye chaiva satvika bhava. Rajasasthama shaschaye, rajasasthama shaschaye. Mattahe veti tan vidhi, mattahe veti tan vidhi. Natvaham teshu te mayi, natvaham teshu te mayi. Tribhir gunamayair bhavair, tribhir gunamayair bhavair. Ebhis sarvam idam jagata, ebhis sarvam idam. Mohitam nabhijanati, mohitam nabhijanati. Mamebhyah paramavyayam, mamebhyah paramavyayam. Daivi yesha gunamayi, daivi yesha gunamayi. Mama maya duratyaya, mama maya duratyaya. Mameva ye prapadyante, mameva ye prapadyante. Maya metam tarantite, maya metam tarantite. Namam dushkritino mudhaha, namam dushkritino mudhaha. Prapadyante naradhamaha, prapadyante naradhamaha. Mayaya pahrata jnana, mayaya pahrata jnana. Asuram bhavam ashritaha, asuram bhavam ashritaha. Chaturvidha bhajante mam, chaturvidha bhajante mam. Jana sukriti norjuna, jana sukriti norjuna. Artho jignasurarthi, artho jignasurarthi. ज्ञानी च भरतर्षभ ज्ञानी च भरतर्षभ तेषां ज्ञानी नित्ययुक्ता तेषां ज्ञानी नित्य एकभक्तिर्विशिष्यते प्रियो हि ज्ञानिनोऽध्यर्थम् यर्थम् प्रियो हि ज्ञानिनोऽध्यर्थम् अहम् स च मम प्रियः उदारा सर्व एवैते ज्ञानित्वात्मैव मे मतम् आस्थितः स हि युक्तात्मा मामेवानुत्तमाम् गतिम्. Very good. So, we finished up through verse 12 in our last class. We'll have to return to verse 12 because it sets the stage for our discussion this morning. We've been seeing in the beginning of chapter 7 this really brilliant unfoldment of the nature of Bhagavan. And before we plunge back in, it's worth remembering and taking careful note that chapter 7, the first chapter dealing with bhakti in the Bhagavad Gita, really talks about knowing Bhagavan. And in fact, that's the concentration through most of the discussion in the Bhagavad Gita on Bhagavan, and indeed in most of the scriptures that we follow. As we've discussed before, faith in God is considered necessary but insufficient. Worth noting that. Faith in God is necessary, but it's not enough. It's not enough because the ancient rishis discovered Bhagavan. You have the opportunity to follow their teachings, to discover what the ancient rishis discovered. And if we fail to make that effort, we're not following their teachings. In fact, it's often been said that a Hindu is one who follows the teachings of the ancient rishis. Well, if you're going to follow those teachings, it means not being content with mere shraddha, mere faith. Doesn't mean that shraddha is unimportant. As we said, it's necessary. It's a beginning point. It certainly is not the ending point. So, chapter 7 opened, and our classes began with quite a detailed Vedantic analysis of who is Bhagavan. Then we are finishing, a sequence of verses which very beautifully describe Bhagavan's presence in and through creation. Bhagavan is the essence, the wetness of water, allow me just to make up my own version, the blueness of the sky, the tallness of the trees. One of the comments Sri Krishna makes, the fragrance of the earth, the very essential aspects of nature itself. Bhagavan is present in all these ways. Bhagavan is present in nature. Why? As we said, nature is a manifestation of Bhagavan. Bhagavan is present in the form of the tree, in the form of the earth, in the form of the sky and moon. And in this verse 12, the last verse we saw in our prior class, it said that Bhagavan exists in all forms, whether those forms are sattvika, rajasa, or tamasa. Whether those forms are sattvika, pure and holy, whether they're rajasa, full of passion and energy, or if they are tamasa, full of darkness and inertia, lethargy. Bhagavan is everything. So Bhagavan is that which is sattvika. The most saintly among us are manifestations of Bhagavan. How about the workaholics among us? Rajasa. This verse says that those who are Rajasa are equally a manifestation of Bhagavan. And even those who are Tamasa, of course, none of them are here this morning. They're still in bed. It's only 11:45. They haven't quite made it up yet today. So this verse says all that exists, whether it's Rajasa, Sattvika, or Tamasa, all that exists is Bhagavan. And just to recall that in ancient times, to look at the universe as trigunatmika, to look at the world as being comprised of three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, this is part of an ancient pre-scientific worldview. Today we look at the universe as being comprised of matter and energy. In those days they thought about it as sattva, rajas, tamas. Now, some of you, especially if you've had a science background, you might be thinking, oh, how quaint and old-fashioned to consider the universe being comprised of these three gunas. Quaint and old-fashioned. Consider 100 years from now, people will look back to our modern concepts of matter and energy and say, how quaint! In the 21st century, they still believed in particles. They still believed in waves. They didn't figure out what this universe really is. Whatever is the prevailing worldview will eventually look archaic. Doesn't mean it's wrong. It means it's just the best we can do at this point in time. So in Vedic times, they looked at the universe as consisting of sattva, rajas, tamas, and they said Bhagavan is present in all those forms. In modern times, we can say that the universe is present as matter and energy. And in the future, and we can say today that Bhagavan is present as matter and as energy. And in the future, who knows? You realize, just a quick aside for those of you who like science, astrophysicists are working very hard to discover what is dark matter and dark energy. Dark energy is a kind of energy that doesn't radiate. Dark matter is a kind of matter that has negative gravity, which means instead of attracting to things, it repels from things. We can't imagine what are these things today, but that's what current science is looking at today. So no doubt in another century or two, our concepts of matter and energy will look very archaic. And the teachings of Professor Einstein, who used to live down the road just 20 miles, his teachings will look equally archaic. So let's when we see teachings in the Bhagavad Gita that look old-fashioned, let's bear in mind what it's really about. So this being said, we can... to introduce the next couple of verses. They bear some introduction. Bhagavan is present in the form of the sun, moon, stars, earth, you and me, Subkuch, everything. And this leads people to the argument that why should I go into a temple, a mandir, to worship God? After all, as Hindus, we all know that God is everywhere. God is manifest in all forms. And the common argument, and it's been said to me several times, Swamiji, God is everywhere, so why do I have to go to the temple? And the answer, of course, is, well, you don't have to go to the temple. No one's twisting your arm. No one makes you do anything in this tradition. Thank goodness that we belong to a tradition where no one is wagging a finger at you, saying, if you don't do this, you're going to hell, right? Many other traditions, somebody is wagging their finger at you, warning you, if you don't do this, watch out. We belong to a tradition where no one is doing that, thank goodness. So, you don't have to go to a temple. But then, does it mean that going to a mandir is unnecessary or arbitrary or even irrelevant? Hardly. When a person says, Swamiji, if God is present everywhere, why do I go into a temple? The full answer is God is present everywhere. Do you see God everywhere? When you look at a tree, do you see God? When you look at the sky, do you see God? When you look at the sun and moon, do you see God? When you look at a person, do you see God? When you look at your very obnoxious next-door neighbor who's driven you crazy for the last 10 years, when you see him, do you see God? And if the answer is no, then maybe you should consider going to the temple, because there you can see God. But it's true that God is present in and through everything, including that obnoxious next-door neighbor. So then why don't we see Bhagavan in all these forms? That's what the next series of verses treats. Tribhir gunamayair bhavair, tribhir gunamayair bhav, ebhis sarvam idam jagata, ebhis sarvam idam jagata, mohitam nabhijanati, mohitam nabhijanati. Mamebhyah paramavyayam, mamebhyah paramavyayam. Sorry, there's a small typo there. Ebhyah paramavyayam at the end. This verse says that sarvam idam jagat. Idam, this, jagat, this world. Sarvam, all of this. This entire world, universe of people, is mohitam, in the second line, deluded, confused. Deluded by what? Tribhihi gunamayaihi bhavaihi ebihi. Deluded ebihi, by these. By these what? Ebihi bhavaihi, by these existences. What do you mean? Tribhihi gunamayaihi. Gunamayaihi. By these tribihi, by these three. By the way, if you're wanting this bhihi, 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 for our Sanskrit students, doesn't that sound instrumental plural? It better. Ebihi, by these tribihi, by these three. Guna mayaihi, by these three gunas, by these three things, guna maya, made of gunas. These three gunas. By these three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, this entire world is mohitam, deluded. What do you mean by deluded by these three gunas? When you see a tree, what do you see? Bark, leaves. Okay. Where is God? You don't see Bhagavan's presence in the tree. You see bark and leaves. You see matter and energy. You see sattva, rajas, and tamas. You see stuff, basically. When you see the tree, you see stuff. You don't see the underlying reality because of which it exists. This is what it means to be mohitam, to be deluded. To be deluded here means you don't see what's really there. And the fact is that we are mohitam, we fail to see what's really there most of the time. We have come to rely on our senses to such a great extent that we often fail to appreciate how limited our senses are, how limited our understanding of the world around us is. A very simple example is you look at an object, you look at this chair. This chair, as you understand, is made of atoms. Atoms, as you understand, are tiny nuclei with even tinier electrons spinning around them. Atoms, therefore, are almost entirely empty space. If you see a scale picture of an atom, it's interesting. The nucleus is the size of my fist right here. The electrons are about 20 or 30 feet away, and in between is all empty space. That's a scale model of an atom. Atoms are almost entirely empty space. What I'm sitting on is made of atoms, almost entirely empty space. Is that what you perceive? This is what it means to be mohitam. We are deluded by appearances. And that's the key word here. What we see on the surface, we accept it as being reality. We fail to appreciate any deeper truth, any deeper reality. My favorite example, many of you have heard here before, favorite example of how we're deluded by what we see is every night when you watch the sun go down. Hey, the sun doesn't go down. The sun doesn't travel around the earth, remember? The earth turns on its axis, which means the sun, from our perspective, the sun is stationary in the sky. We're on this huge globe tilting over backwards. This is what it means to be mohitam, tribihi gunamayaihi, to be deluded by three gunas. We can use some very simple English language. We are deluded by appearances, or in Sanskrit, nama-rupa, name and form. Because we don't go beyond nama-rupa, we don't look beyond the name and form to see the surupa, to see the vastu, the essence below, underneath. We don't perceive that, we are mohitam. Of course, if you really look even more deeply, what will you find? So you look at the chair more deeply, you come up with atoms. You look at the atoms more deeply, you come up with neutrons, protons, electrons. You look at them more deeply, you come up with quarks. You look at them more deeply, you come up with something else. You look at those more deeply, you come up with something else. Ultimately, all of this is a manifestation of Bhagavan. The underlying reality because of which anything and everything exists, that adhishtana, that underlying reality, basis, that is Bhagavan. Bhagavan is literally the stuff out of which this universe is woven, the ultimate stuff out of which the universe is woven. Do we see that? No. We are mohitam, we are deluded by the appearances, and therefore, na abhijanati, therefore, one does not know, abhijanati, to know completely is abhijanati. One does not know completely, mom, Sri Krishna says, me. One doesn't know me. Ebhyaha param. Beyond those, ebhyaha, beyond those. Param, beyond. Ebhyaha param, mam. One doesn't know me beyond those. Beyond what? It says those, plural. So what are we talking about? Three gunas, the three gunas. So one, being deluded by appearances, people don't recognize me, Sri Krishna says, the one who is beyond the three gunas and avyayam, unchanging, partless. That unchanging part, that word avyaya, that which doesn't decay, that which doesn't change. Referring to that sad adhishtana, that real basis because of which everything in the universe exists. That because of which matter and energy exists, that which because of which dark matter and dark energy, whatever scientists figure those out to be, whatever they are, they exist because of what? Because of sadvastu, because of the underlying truth. Sadvastu. Every time I say that expression in Sanskrit, sadvastu, I'm reminded of Puja Swami Dayananda's funny observation. Now, here's a very traditional, many of you were here last weekend and the weekend before for Puja Swamiji's wonderful, wonderful lectures. He's a very remarkable teacher because he's at the same time, he's an extremely traditional teacher of Advaita Vedanta from South India. On the other hand, he's very well informed about modern Western culture. So as a young student, I remember him explaining this topic and talking about sadvastu, talking about Bhagavan as the underlying reality. Sat here means real, vastu means literally thing. sadvastu, the real thing. Years ago, Pooja Swamiji observed in America, everyone knows, in fact, not just America, around the world, everyone knows what is the real thing. And the answer is Coca-Cola. Yeah, to hear a very traditional sannyasi making this joke is very hilarious. But isn't it true if you hear the real thing, what comes into your head? That's the power of advertising, by the way. How much our thinking has been conditioned by this repeated exposure to all this advertising. My gosh, talk about mental pollution. All right, then what? Daivi hesha gunamayi, daivi hesha gunamayi, mama maya duratyaya, mama maya duratyaya, mameva ye prapadyante, mameva ye prapadyante, maya metam tarantite, maya metam tarantite. Daivi hi esha gunamayi maya. Mama maya. Mama maya, Sri Krishna says. My maya. This world of three gunas, this world of nama rupa, of appearances, this world of appearances obscures Bhagavan, but simultaneously is Bhagavan. That's tricky. This world of appearance is Bhagavan, but it simultaneously obscures us from recognizing Bhagavan. How can that be so? How can something be right in front of our eyes and we don't recognize the truth of what it is? This is called the power of Maya. This is Maya. Maya, that capacity of the universe to think it's other than what it is. Maya. Yama sa maya. Kind of a tongue-in-cheek definition. Yama. Ya-na. That which is not. Sa maya. That is maya. That which is not, that is maya. The chair is maya. Why? It's not a chair, it's atoms. Atoms are maya. Why? They're not atoms, they're particles. Particles are maya. Why? They're not particles, they're something else. This is what it means, maya, referring to this world of name and form. And that world of nama rupa, which obscures us from recognizing Bhagavan's presence, that world is a manifestation of Bhagavan, of God. Therefore, Sri Krishna says, mama maya, this is my maya. And my maya, he says, is gunamayi. It's made of these three gunas. And esha hi daivi. Esha, this maya, he indeed is daivi. It's divine. If it's Bhagavan's maya, it has to be divine. It belongs to God, it is divine. So this divine maya, which belongs to Bhagavan, what about it? He says, it is duratyaya. It is difficult to cross. Duratyaya, literally, difficult to cross, difficult to penetrate, difficult to understand. Think of how many generations we sat on chairs before we knew they were composed of atoms. For how many generations we thought atoms were unbreakable, right? The ancient Greeks were among the first to identify an entity called atom. The word atom is indeed a Greek word. And as I think atomos means that which is not breakable, that which can't be broken. Until about 70 years ago or so, when the unbreakable, 60 years ago, the unbreakable was broken. All right. So we didn't know. We thought atoms were unbreakable. We didn't know. This is what it means, duratyaya. Doesn't mean it's impossible to know. Dur means difficult. It is known with difficulty. It is penetrated with difficulty. With difficulty, one can transcend this world of appearances. One can transcend mama maya. One can transcend the maya of Bhagavan. And then what? Who is able to penetrate this world of appearances? This is our next topic. Who is capable of looking beyond the surface and discovering what is the underlying truth? Who is able to look at the sunset and know that the sun doesn't go down, that the earth turns on its axis? Well, someone who can know that is someone who's learned in a science class, I suppose, that the earth turns on its axis. Who is it that can know that this chair is composed of atoms? Someone who has understood properly. Again, some education is required. Then, who is it that can know? Who is it that can know that atoms are composed of particles? No. We can learn through books and through classes, through education, but 60, 70 years ago, physicists had to discover it the hard way. They had to take these atoms, spin them up really fast, and smash them against each other until they broke apart into particles. They had to break atoms in order to discover they were made of particles. They had to find out, they had to figure it out. Now, our topic, of course, is not science. What will it take to penetrate to the essence of the universe, not in a scientific sense, but penetrate this world of appearances to discover the underlying truth because of which everything exists, the underlying truth because of which matter and energy exist, Bhagavan, God, as the reality because of which everything exists? This is not a scientific inquiry. You're not going to figure this out in some high-energy physics laboratory. You're not going to figure this out through some mathematical formulas. Then who is it that will be able to penetrate this world of appearances to discover Bhagavan? He says, Mam eva ye prapadyante, ye, those who prapadyante seek. Ye prapadyante, those who seek, Mam eva. Me alone. Sri Krishna speaks here in the first person. Those who pursue me alone, taranti. They cross. They will cross etam mayam. They will cross this maya. Etam mayam, this maya. Te taranti, they will cross. Who will cross? Ye prapadyante, those who seek mam eva. And this eva kara is worth noting. You get what you pursue in life. Doesn't it sound pretty obvious? Someone who pursues money gets money to some extent. Someone who pursues success gets success to some measure. Someone who pursues family and friends gets that. Someone who pursues power for whatever reason, to some extent, you get what you pursue. Science pursues knowing the essence of stuff, knowing how stuff works. This is not a scientific inquiry. One who seeks Bhagavan is one who can discover that underlying reality. You get what you're looking for. If, I guess the corollary is, you probably don't get what you're not looking for, right? You get what you're looking for, you're not going to get what you're not looking for. So scientists, by peering into matter and energy with more and more precision, a scientist is not one day going to discover, hey, I've just discovered Bhagavan. in some high-energy physics machine, they're not going to break apart quarks and find Bhagavan's presence. They're not going to find Bhagavan because they're not looking for Bhagavan. They're looking and trying to understand how things in the world are put together. But one who seeks God can discover God. That's what this last line means. Who are they? Those who really seek Bhagavan, who seek that ultimate truth of reality, who are they? Namam duskriti no mudhaha. Namam duskriti no mudha. Prapadyante naradhamaha. Prapadyante naradhamaha. Mayayapahrita jnana. Mayayapahrita jnana. Asuram bhavam ashritaha. Asuram bhavam. Before he tells you who can find Bhagavan, he tells us who won't find Bhagavan. And I'm giggling a little bit here because of the language that he uses. He calls them mudhaha, deluded fools. Mudha, murk. Those deluded fools, he says, who are dushkratinaha, who do harmful things, dushkratin, those who act wrongly, those who fail to follow dharma, those who hurt others, those people are dushkratin. So dushkratinaha mudhaha, those fools who hurt others who don't follow dharma, those fools who are nara adhamaha, last word in the first line. The adhama, the lowest among nara, among people. Those lowliest of people who don't follow dharma, who hurt other people, who are mudhaha, who are fools, who are deluded fools. What about them? Mam na prapadyante. Not that they don't find me, Sri Krishna says. They don't seek me. Mam, me, na prapadyante. They don't even bother seeking me. Think about what people generally pursue in life. We've said before, people pursue money, power, success, and even good things. I mean, not that anything's wrong. There's nothing wrong with pursuing money and success and all of that. But then you think, well, that's kind of selfish. Okay, even those who pursue family and friends and nice emotional situations, fine, those are still all worldly pursuits. And you find what you're looking for. If you're engaged in a worldly pursuit, you're going to have worldly rewards. One who is narrowly focused on worldly pursuits alone will na prapadyante. They don't seek Bhagavan. Very clearly, this comment doesn't apply to any of you in the room today. Why have you come here for this class? This is what it means to seek Bhagavan. At least temporarily, it requires turning your back on worldly activities. There are many other things you could be doing on a Saturday morning, including staying in bed and sleeping and catching up after a long, stressful week, or going out and doing some recreational activities, or going shopping. This appears to be the major form of recreation in this country, I think, is shopping. Used to be people would go out and get involved in some sports or exercise or recreational activities. Nowadays, people just go out and shop. This is recreation. I don't get it. Anyway. You get what you're looking for. If you go into Macy's, what are you going to find? You go into a Target store and all of these stores, what are you going to find? And this reminds me when I lived at Arsha Vidya Gurukulam, our ashram in the Poconos. It's on this rural road in the Pocono Mountains. You get off the highway, you get off of Route 33. Many of you have been up there. So you get off of Route 33, you turn onto the main road that leads to the ashram, and as you're approaching the ashram, you have a choice. Because to your left is a huge flea market. One of the biggest flea markets in Pennsylvania is to the left. To the right is Arsha Vidya Gurukulam. And you have a choice. You can turn left, you can turn right. Now, it's not surprising that most people turn left. And when you go into the flea market, what do you find? Junk. Most of the stuff in a flea market, you know, people clean out their garages, and instead of throwing the stuff out, what do? They put it in their car and they haul it off to a flea market, and they try to get $5 or $10 for it, but it's junk. Better it goes to a flea market, otherwise it'll end up in a landfill. So better, of course, if it ends up in a flea market, then it ends up in your garage, and then it'll either end up in a flea market or eventually a landfill anyway. But the point is, most people turn left. They get junk. You turn right. What a metaphor. Shreyas and Preyas. A reference from Upanishad. In life, there are two things you can pursue. You can pursue that which is Preyas. Nice. Pleasant. Or you can pursue that which is Shreyas. That which is best. That which is the ultimate goal of life. So here, we acknowledge that most people who are mudhaha, who are deluded by this world of appearances, who think this is what you can get and no more, they will only make worldly pursuits. You get what you look for. And what about these people? They are mayaya apahritajnanaha in the beginning of the second line. There are people who are apahrita jnana. Very nice Sanskrit here. It's a bahuvrihi samasa, a particular form of compound. It means those whose jnana, whose wisdom is apahrita, carried away, stolen away. Stolen away by what? Mayaya. By maya, by this world of appearances. Those whose... mayaya apahrita jnanaha, those whose wisdom is stolen away by the world of appearances. Sounds like everyone, at least from time to time. We all lose our way in life, or at least occasionally. We get lured into thinking that this is very important, or that's very important, or something is very important. Our priorities get distorted. Did that ever happen to you?
Sure.
It's happened to us all. If your true priority in life is spiritual growth, is that reflected in all of our thinking and pursuits? Probably not. Why is that? Even though you may profess that my ultimate goal in life is spiritual growth, that's probably not manifest in everything you say and do throughout the day. Why? Again and again, we lose track of our priorities. We lose sight of what is ultimately important to us. This is what it means, mayaya apahrita jnana. Our understanding, our priorities are temporarily swept away, mayaya, by this world of appearances. But it gets worse than that. Because here he is talking about nara adhama. He's talking about people who are totally swept away by this world of appearances. Totally means they have no spiritual values whatsoever. Their only value is for material things, material success, material comforts. It's the only thing they pursue. They are absolutely mudha, deluded. These people who are nara adhama, who are the lowest among people, asuram bhavam ashrataha, these are people who are ashrata, who have resorted to asuram bhavam, a demonic nature. Asuram, demonic, bhavam, nature. Ashrataha. There's a reference in chapter, is it 16 or 17? We're going to talk about this asura bhava, demonic nature. Here we're talking about the negative extreme. In this world, we see a wide range of people, of behaviors. Remember in a science class seeing a bell curve? Bell curve describes a distribution. Most people are in the middle, that middle of the bell curve. Most of us are in the middle. Some of us are a little bit more on the spiritual side. Good. A few of us are way on that spiritual side. Excellent. Some of us are a little bit on the other side. Problem. A few of us are out at that extreme. A few of us, metaphorically speaking, a few of us take handguns and commit crimes. A few of us get onto airplanes and hijack them and cause death and destruction. A few of us. The range of human behavior is vast, from the greatest of the great to the nara adhama, to the lowest of the low. So this is the one he describes here, those who are asuram bhavam ashrita, those who are overcome by their animal tendencies, overcome by this lowly, base nature. Such people, obviously, mam na prapadyante, they will never seek Bhagavan. They'll never seek anything more. Why? They are mayaya apahrita jnana. They don't know there's anything better to pursue. It really is a matter of understanding. And before we move on, there's a very important point to be made here, not to be glossed over. When we say somebody has asura bhava, someone is demonic, including those 19 terrorists who brought down those planes in 2001, that's who Sri Krishna is talking about here. But let us not lose sight of the fact that these people are equally manifestations of Bhagavan. What did we talk about at the beginning of this class? That everything that exists, whether it's sattvika, rajasa, or tamasa, everything means everything. Which means those 19 terrorists who flew the planes on September 11th were all, and we discussed this several times before, they were divine terrorists. And I'm not being facetious. They were divine terrorists. What they did was demonic. What they did was horrible. Why would a manifestation of divinity do something so horrible? The answer is found in this verse. Mayaya apahrita jnana. Their wisdom, their reasoning, their judgment has been stripped away. Apahrita jnana, that term is so powerful. Their wisdom and judgment has been stripped away. Mayaya. How? For those 19 terrorists, you can be sure that their thinking was perverted by some religious zealot. You know that. They went to some madrasa or some other Islamic institution which was run by a radical mullah who poisoned their minds, those 19 terrorists. Their wisdom and judgment was robbed, from them. Doesn't excuse them. They did what they did. That's a fact. But it's also a fact that they are apahita jnana. Their wisdom was stripped away. All right. So therefore, and the point we're making here is in this tradition, there's no such thing as an evil person. If everyone is divine, there's no evil person who has ever walked this planet. Then how do we explain such horrible destructive acts, not through evil, but through ignorance? Please note that in this tradition, the source of all that is undesirable, the source of man's cruelty to man, is not the power of evil. There's no such thing. From the standpoint of Hindu thought, there is no such thing as a power of evil. That's a biblical concept. What we are up against is the power of ignorance. And ignorance, sadly, is very powerful. All right. Then, in the prior verse, we saw, who is it that don't seek Bhagavan? Now, thank goodness, we turn our attention to those who seek Bhagavan. Chaturvidha bhajante mam, chaturvidha bhajante jana sukriti norjuna, jana sukriti nor arto jignasur artarti, arto jignasur jnani cha bharatar shabha. Jnani cha bharata. Good. So who is it that seeks Bhagavan? Those janaha, those people who are sukritinaha. Before we saw dushkritina, those people who do harmful actions in the prior verses, but now we see sukritinaha, those people who do good deeds, good actions, those people who follow dharma. What about them? They bhajante mam, Arjuna. O Arjuna, they bhajante, they worship mam, me. Bhaj, the root bhaj has many meanings. It often means serve, to perform some kind of seva. It can mean also to seek, and in the current context, it definitely suggests seeking, although it has a much wider context. The general meaning, of course, is worship, and that meaning here is fine, I suppose. So, bhajante mam janaha, those people who are sukritinaha, who follow dharma, who do good deeds, they bhajante mam, they seek me, they worship me. Who are they? And now we get into a favorite topic in Bhagavad Gita. And a verse, this verse is often quoted when people talk about bhakti for very good reasons. Allow me to give a brief introduction, because it's an important theme or concept in this tradition. Sometimes we take this tradition for granted and we fail to appreciate how much freedom and latitude we're given when it comes to our prayer life, when it comes to our spiritual life. I said at the beginning of the class, no one wags a finger at us and says, you better do this or else. And those who do wag a finger at us, you have my permission to ignore them. Because in my opinion, they're not very good representatives of this tradition. It's not the approach of the ancient rishis. The ancient rishis appeared to recognize an extremely important concept we've talked about before, but it's so important. Let's talk about it again. The concept is adhikari bheda. If you haven't heard this expression, please take careful note. Bheda, difference. Difference between adhikaris. Now, adhikari here doesn't have any Hindi meaning. We're not talking about people who are in charge of anything. We're talking about levels of preparedness Adhikara in Sanskrit means preparedness. The most fundamental meaning of adhikara is preparedness. Adhikari is one who is prepared. It refers to a level of competency. One who is competent is an adhikari. Of course, there are different levels of competency. Certainly, there are uttama adhikaris. There are those who are most competent. There are madhyama adhikaris, middle of our bell curve, those who are middling in their competence. Then there are others like me. Who are they? Adhama adhikari, manda adhikari, low level of competence. People come in different flavors, so to speak, different levels, different degrees. Thank goodness the ancient rishis recognized that we're not all the same. Some of us are more mature, some of us are less mature. We all have different characteristics, we all have different dispositions. Is it not so? What a shame when a religious teaching or teacher lumps us all into one category. And really speaking, isn't that what most religions do? Most religions prescribe a practice, a spiritual practice, a scripture, a dogma, a tenet of belief, a doctrine that is to be embraced by everyone. Most religious traditions, you worship one God, one name of God, one form or one aspect of God. Most religious traditions take religion in a very narrow sense and therefore lump us all into one category. But you all know very well that there is such a wide difference among us. When a religious teaching ignores our differences, it's a problem. The ancient rishis recognized this principle of adhikari bheda. There is a tremendous difference among us in terms of our competency, in terms of our preparedness, and therefore we need teachings that are appropriate for each and every one of us. That's it. By the way, it's not that one is better and one is worse. It's a matter of degree. It's a matter of competency. Tell me, in a university, in a college, let us say, is someone who's studying calculus a better student than someone who's studying algebra? Think twice. Is someone who's studying calculus a better student than someone who's studying algebra? Suppose our calculus student is getting C's and our algebra student is getting A's. Who's a better student? You get my point. It's not that one is better and one is worse. It's a matter of where we are in terms of our life of spiritual growth. We all started out in life utterly incompetent. As infants, as toddlers, we were, each and every one of us, were so utterly incompetent, we didn't know when we had to go to the bathroom. This is how incompetent we were. We all start off in the same place. We all are engaged in a process of growth. Emotional growth, intellectual growth, spiritual growth, and hopefully by now, not too much more physical growth. That has to come to an end. But it happens. We all started off in life equally incompetent. We are all engaged in a process of growth. We have all made progress to various degrees, depending on opportunities we've had and depending on our own natures and interests and commitments. So, none of us are better, none of us are worse. A few are a little further along on the path of growth, a few are a little behind us on the path of growth, and wherever you are on that path of growth, isn't it true that there are always a bunch of people ahead of you and a bunch of people behind you? no matter how high you climb, there are always so many people who have climbed higher. No matter how low you may fall, there are always so many people who have fallen lower, wherever we are on that path of growth. By the way, one can actually, you know, one makes progress going up that mountain, but one can backslide. I think kids play this game called Chutes and Ladders. Sometimes life is like that. You make some progress, but then you make a mistake, and then there's a setback. Then you make some more progress, there's a mistake, and you make some setback. So when you make progress, there are people who have made more progress than you. When you have a setback, there are people who have lost more than you. No one's better, no one's worse. We're all working our way forward. So let's apply this now to our spiritual life. And this verse brilliantly acknowledges this adhikari bheda, this difference among us in terms of competency. And it describes this difference in a fourfold way. Chatur vidha. That is, people who worship Bhagavan, bhajante ma, those who worship me, Sri Krishna says, those who worship me, those who are sukriti, those who are doing good things, following dharma, he says, they are chaturvidha, they are of four kinds, they come into four categories. What are those categories? Artaha, jignasuhu, artarti, and jnani. Bhartarshaba, O Mighty One, O Mighty Arjuna, these are the four. The Artha, the Artharthi, the Jignasu, and the Jnani. And I'll take them in this slightly changed order. The simple meanings. The Artha. Artha means one who is afflicted, one who is in distress. It refers to the person who only prays when they're in real, real trouble. Someone who never goes into a mandir otherwise, someone who never prays otherwise, but once in a great while when they're really in deep blank, when they're in real trouble, then only they pray, such a person here is called an artha. Next category, artharti. Artin is one who seeks. One who seeks artha, here meaning wealth and security. One who seeks wealth and security is an artharti. This is a person who typically prays, "Hey Bhagavan, please help me. I need this, I need that. Ye de do, ye bhi de do." You know, give me this, give me that, give me sab kuch de do. You know, this, sometimes our prayers are like that. Give me this, give me that, the person who prays. Then comes a person who is the jignasu. Jignasu means one who literally wants to know Bhagavan. Jignasa is a desire to know. Jignasu is one who has jignasa. One who has the desire to know. So the jignasu is a third category, the one who wants to know Bhagavan. And the fourth category, the jnani, the one who knows Bhagavan, the one who has discovered God. Now, let's talk about these four in some detail. We mentioned the artha, the one who only prays in times of dire distress. Look at this verse very carefully. Is Sri Krishna criticizing these people? Look at that verse carefully. Sri Krishna is praising those people in this verse. All of these four are being praised here. Sri Krishna says, they're all sukritinaha. They're all good people. They all bhajante mam, they all worship me, all chaturvidha, all four kinds of these, they worship me. Sri Krishna is praising that person who only prays once in several years when everything is going wrong, why is this person being praised? At least they pray. At least they believe in Bhagavan. At least they recognize a power outside of themselves. They recognize that they are not the boss of the universe. This is an important recognition. So they're praised. Similarly, the Artarti, the person who prays for material things, the person who... Deepavali is coming. Some of you know that in business places throughout India and throughout the world, many Hindus do Lakshmi Puja on the occasion of Deepavali. For some people, it's the beginning of the fiscal year. New books are opened at that time. And you can just imagine so many pujas being done for what purpose? You know, the business owner is praying that their gross receipts should go up by at least 20% in the coming year. This is the nature of that prayer. Now, is Sri Krishna criticizing them? They're being praised. Why are they being praised? At least they recognize that without Bhagavan's blessings, they won't get anything. That everything and anything that comes to us in life is a blessing of Bhagavan. So the fact that they recognize that and they pray to Bhagavan for these material things, it's a good thing. It's arguably better than the Artha, who only prays once in several years when they're in real trouble, but not as good as the Jnani. The Jignasu. The one who understands that all the material success in life will never make me happy. Fact. One who recognizes that only spiritual growth will ultimately lead to unbroken contentment and peace in life. True, right? No amount of work, no amount of success, no amount of material wealth or security, nothing is ever going to make you completely at peace and have a kind of contentment in life which is always with you. It never comes and goes. You'll never get that through worldly pursuits. You know that well. It's achieved only through seeking Bhagavan, through seeking God, through seeking spiritual growth. Therefore, the Jignasu is one who prays, "Hey Bhagavan, please help me grow spiritually. Please help me do the right thing in life. Please help me make the right decisions. Please lead me on a path of spiritual growth that I may ultimately come to know who you truly are." This is the prayer of the Jignasu. Arguably better than the Artarti, better than the Artha, not as good perhaps as the Jnani, the one who's actually discovered Bhagavan. We're going to talk more about this in the next class, but it's really important to recognize here that there is no value judgment implied among these four. Sri Krishna is not criticizing any of these. As we've discussed, all four of these are being praised. Now, if you think, but Swamiji, what about that person? He only prays once in several years when they're in deep trouble. What kind of person is that? Good person, doing the best they can. And if that's the best they can do, well, how well did we do as little children when we didn't even know when we needed to use a bathroom? You know, what can we say? Should we be criticized as 6-month-old infants? Should we be criticized? That's where we are, in a state of development. So if a person has that level of development where they only pray once in a great while, okay, at least they pray. If a person is still praying only for material things, that person certainly does not deserve any criticism. That person, too, deserves praise. As we discussed, they recognize that everything comes from Bhagavan. It's good. They're not better, they're not worse. Can we get this image that we're all struggling to advance on the path? Those who are ahead are not better than those who are lagging behind. They are just further ahead. Those who are lagging behind can rise just as high. Those who have climbed very high, if they're not careful, remember our chutes and ladders. Those who have climbed very high, they can fall back. So when we see teachings like this, let's recognize the spirit of these teachings. It's not to say some of us are better and some of us are worse, but rather to acknowledge this very important teaching of adhikari bheda. We're all different. Different levels of competency. Therefore, we have different teachings to address us all. Okay. Well, I think we'll come a little bit more to be said here. So in our next class, we'll begin with a little bit more discussion on this last part of the verse. Good. A couple of announcements here to be made at the end of the class. Let's see, what are these? Oh, a week from Monday.